this show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. You can always find me at coyotenetworknews.com. So it is Maundy Thursday. It is Holy Week, right? Tomorrow is Good Friday. Then we get Crypt Saturday. Then we get Easter Sunday. And Maundy, what does Maundy mean? It's the Last Supper, so, you know, put out a good spread. But it means commandment. And the only commandment Jesus gave at that dinner was love one another. Damn it. So there we have it. So a rowdy and raucous caucus, Yvette Buigas is my guest today. I learned of her in a fabulous article in The Atlantic called The Crow Whisperer by Lauren Markham. She's the star of that. So we are here that we honor flora, fauna, and deepen our participatory animism, that we may be worthy of our kin, as all chauvinism and human cruelty and war on life are on trial now. Everything speaking to us, Derek Chauvin, but Nicholas Chauvin is the person that we got the word chauvinism from, so it's all mythological. So whatever our rogue species does to our kin will happen to our community. So let us gather now to renew our respect for life. The word respect means to look again, spect, look, by approaching the world with informed, reverent curiosity. What's your story, and how can we cooperate? Including viruses, largely arising by our rogue species' lack of respect for boundaries and home habitat. And it's April Fool's Day also, so we include animal humor as well. So Yvette Uyghurs's Instagram accounts are For the Love of Jeffrey, J-E-F-R-E-Y, and Heavy Black Line. Welcome, Yvette.
Hi. How are you?
I'm all the better for talking to your spirited self. It is such a great article, you are such a wonderful rowdy advocate, which includes pet training, sacral cranial work, and when we were just backstage, you said that the Upledger Institute has just created a course for dog sacral cranial work. Is that course, right?
That course is a few years old, but yes. Yeah.
Oh, super great. So let's begin. You know, I've reread the article many times, but our listening audience has not possibly. So we might say, you know, how does it begin with the family, I guess, in Oakland that was being bombarded by crows and they didn't know what to do? Do you want to just narrate a little bit of that?
Sure. They are neighbors of mine. I did not know them before this incident, but they were having issues with some crows at the beginning of the pandemic, dive bombing them and dive bombing their dog and not really wanting to share their backyard with the people who lived in the house. And at some point their dog got a hold of a fledgling, or at least that's what they thought. And so they posted on the neighborhood Facebook group about if anybody knew what to do. And they got all sorts of suggestions, I guess. But they also, I got tagged a lot in that post. Mostly because people know that I feed the crows, and a lot of people in the neighborhood know of Carl, who was a crow that we raised and had around for a while. So they reached out to me. They finally reached out to me. I went over and I helped them with this crow that it was a fledgling, and she wasn't going to make it. Her wing was completely severed. And I showed up hiding. I showed up wearing a mask, obviously, pandemic, but also covering my face because I didn't want the neighborhood crows to recognize me and associate me with an injured crow. Mostly because, as a lot of people know, they can recognize me, and then they wouldn't feel that I was a safe place for them anymore. So go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that you showed up all in black, right?
All in black, yeah. I have a couple of things that aren't black, but yeah, it's basically, I'm in black right now. So I showed up and I gave them some advice about the crows, but what Danny noticed was that when I showed up and started talking to the crows, not only out loud, but also just centering myself and letting them know that I was there to help, he had mentioned to me when I was finished that the crows had immediately quieted down and that they hadn't been quiet for days. And that's when he shared that with Lauren, that's when she reached out to me for the article.
Right. No, that's so great, because I think at first they didn't know, and then a neighbor told them that their dog might have had a fledgling in its mouth, and they're like,
exactly.
Oh, there's the story.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's the story. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think this is so important to all of us, really. It's like, what's the story? Do the detective work. What's going on? What do you have to say? Oh.
Well, I was telling Danny that same day, I'm sure I told him, that, you know, in my own yard, I do feed the crows peanuts, and I feel I have to because we raised a crow here, so if he's ever in trouble, he might want to come back for some food. When the crows, they have two distinct caws that I know exactly what they're trying to tell me. One of them is the, hey, lady, peanuts, hey, lady, come give us some peanuts. And the other one is, thanks for the peanuts, lady, but you've got to get your cat out of the yard. And you've got to get that cat out right now. And when I hear that I, without fail, if I check for peanuts, they're all gone. And if I check for my cat after hearing the more urgent call, my cat is under the feeder looking at them.
Right.
Yeah.
And can you speak crow? Can you do a caw-caw?
Well, it's not the best caw-caw because it's paw-paw-paw when it comes out of my mouth. But it's funny, I think that Carl, you know, because I would use that sound with him all the time, and they're great mimics. And so I'm just hoping that one day I'll be walking down the neighborhood and a crow will fly over my head and go, paw-caw, paw-caw, and then I'll be happy forever.
Yes, Carl is the name of your crow. There's a wonderful story you tell in the article. You found him, you raised him, and then he went off for a while and came back going, I'm not ready yet, because he was missing feathers and whatever, and so he stayed with you for six more months and then took off. But then you were at a music festival and...
Yeah, I was at a local great music festival called Burger Boogaloo that's in Oakland Mosswood Park. And I got up to go to get, you know, to come home for a bit. And when I got to my bicycle, Carl was sitting on my seat. And there was a group of people around going, oh, is he okay? They were worried about him because when have you seen a crow just hanging out on someone's bicycle? And I walked up and I was like, oh my God, Carl. And I immediately started crying because I hadn't seen him in like 6 weeks. And he flew over to me, and thank God I had a little protein bar with me. So I started feeding him, and people were asking me, oh, is that a pet crow? Is that? And I was like, oh no, he's a friend of mine because he's a wild animal. And I know you know, he needs to be a crow. While we were raising him, we had people offer us. I had people offering me a couple of grand to purchase him as a pet.
Oh no.
And, you know, it just wasn't a life for, I'm torn between, I wish I would have handled him a little bit more so that he would come back more. But I knew that wasn't a life for a crow. Like he was a healthy, good crow, and he could crow for the rest, you know, for the rest of his life. He's always welcome to come back. And now and again, I'll be walking my dog in the neighborhood and I'll get a tap on my shoulder by a crow flying by. So I imagine it's him. And, he hung out with me at that show, at that festival, until nightfall. And I rode my bike home at 10 o'clock with him on my head and him flying around me, and he'd land on my head. And he spent the night here, and then he was off again.
But you also said that he was on your head or your shoulder while you were dancing to pretty loud music, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I was, you know, he was there with me for two sets. One was X, old punk rock band from Los Angeles, and the other one was the Buzzcocks. So he was there for a couple of good sets of
crows,
loud music.
So crows, you know, are punks.
Maybe, yeah, this one was.
Maybe. Right, no, that's so great, because, you know, in music festivals past, and may everything emerge more respectful, but, you know, that there was many good things, but also at night, just a cacophony of of loud bands coming from all over, and I go, there are creatures that live here. You know, one was in Costa Rica, and the monkeys were like, hey, we live here. Just go cut that out. But I like to know that crow, because, you know, I don't speak crow well or as well as you do, certainly, but I do love the engagement. Again, you know, especially when, you know, the crow, and I speak crow very badly, but the crow will go, gah, and I'll go, gah. And then sometimes if they get engaged, they'll go, gah, 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 and they go back, gah, 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 and then they get more intricate. And I love that. We do love this so much.
Yeah.
To and fro.
You know, they're just such special animals. They're just so smart. I have had not the best experiences with them. Also, I found a fledgling, the very first fledgling I ever found. The reason why I had my husband bring this last Carl home to me was because he found him at the dog park, and he was not going to survive being on the ground in the dog park. But I found one once across the street from where I used to live, and I was like, oh, I've got to save him. And I took him home, and the crows, about 10 of them, followed me all the way home, and they yelled at me the whole time. And I took him upstairs, and I made him nice and comfortable, and I then started doing research online and found that crows actually learn how to fly from the ground. They learn, you know, they learn how to fly from the ground up, and that's what this bird was doing, that he was, in fact, not injured, that he was trying to get it used to his wings and get the feel for what wings do. And so I was mortified because now I had this crow, but I also know that any crow will take him back because they'll recognize him as a baby crow. So I, the next morning, got up and they were all waiting for me outside my front door. And they followed me back to where I found him, and they yelled and yelled at me, and I was crying and asking for forgiveness. And I put him in the exact spot that I found him at. And for then on, for 6 months, every time I would walk my dog, I was followed by crows. And they would keep an eye on me. And as time went on, the yelling at me got less and less. And my husband would come home from a dog walk, and he'd laugh going, I walked the dogs. I didn't get bombarded by yelling and dive-bombing birds. They must like me. And I'm like, oh, well, that's for sure. They don't like me right now. But, so they're very...
You know, somebody else the crows didn't like is when George W. Bush was in the White House, every time he gave a speech outside, the crows were there going, ah, ah, and he'd stop talking, and they'd stop, and then he'd start talking, and they'd go, ah, 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 lies, ah, ah. Because, you know, crows in fairy tales, they're the keepers of the uber narrative. They go, ah, ah, if only the prince knew not to drink that tea, then he wouldn't go to sleep, and he'd marry his beloved. I mean, it's like so in the fairy tales, I like that. But also, I love that they were razzing George W. Bush.
I love that.
You know, the many misunderstandings, you know, you told me the tragic story about the crows and the Iowa corn, and maybe you want to tell us that we be more respectful.
It's just a great example of how we're all interdependent, right? We all depend on each other. And these crows, they had set in their roost dynamite, and they killed 10,000 plus crows in Iowa, some farmers did, because the crows were in the cornfields, and they thought it was obvious that they were destroying their corn. So they did this, and then they found that the next season there were not as many crows, but they found that what the crows were really doing were eating the bugs and the snails that were eating the corn. And so they now have, at least a set of farmers has a good agreement with the crows. The crows are good, and they're helping.
And, right. Well.
Yeah.
Well, since it's also, you know, way Holy Week, it's not unlike the Catholic Church and its war on cats. And they used to, you know, kill cats, and then people would wear burned cat corpse as a smudge on their forehead. And then, of course, the rats came with the fleas bearing the plague, and there's nothing to stop it because they'd gotten rid of their helpers. Right.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like that. And then there's another story. My friend Chaz in Costa Rica, way out in the ruralness, and he'd been there for a while, built his house, knew the neighbors. And one day he saw this huge, vast army of ants making its way towards his house. And he's like, oh my God. And they started to come into the house. And it was masses and masses of ants. And he went to his neighbors because he's like, what do I do? Do I kill them? How do I get my guitar? What do I? And they said, oh, no. This happens every year at this time. You know, you just have a cup of tea. And what they do is they come through every house. And Jazz said he could hear this mad scrambling in the walls. Like they come through every time at this year, and they eat all the cockroaches. And you just have a cup of tea, and in about 20 minutes, you can go home, and your house will be all clean.
Wonderful!
I find that so charming. Right, and there was another one that happens in Costa Rica. Apparently, there are these winged insects, and sort of shedding their wings. It looked like angels' wings, and he was like, "What? What is this?" And the neighbors again said, "This happens every year around the solstice, and we call it the Festival of Angels, and they come and do this thing, and we love it, and we honor them, and these are all your kin, What's your story? And if you don't know, and the ants won't tell you, talk to your, native neighbors, and they'll go, oh, no, this happens all the time. This is how we cooperate with that. I just love that so much. So
absolutely.
Yeah. And, you were born the year of the dragon, like me, and I think of dragons like sleeper cells right now, because the dragon year and any Chinese animal year happens every 12 years, and Jupiter, the intelligence of curiosity, is a 12-year cycle. So all dragons have Jupiter and Taurus, which is our animistic kinship and how we find knowledge and all. And it's coming alive now. I think of all dragons like sleeper cells stirring, as all people born in the 1960s, with the Uranus-Pluto conjunction, also kind of sleeper cells. And I don't know, I hope you don't mind, but when you said you're a Capricorn, but a bad Capricorn because of so much Sagittarius, and I go, oh, no, you're an excellent Capricorn because you're out and about curious, and you file scouting reports, and then, you will study anything as long as it's useful, right? And you resonated to
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I do consider myself a student always, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you again, out and about, gathering stories, a scout, filing scouting reports, and then you have what's called a grand trine in Earth, so it's like very solid, wild and wild and caucusy and crow-like, but maybe that's what the crows are like too, which is, all that kind of, but very solid underneath. Do you think of crows as pretty self-possessed?
Oh, yeah. I do. I think that they, Carl, one of the fascinating things about having him with us for so long was people would ask me, how are you going to teach him how to fly? And I was like, oh, I don't know, but I'll figure it out. And how am I going to teach him how to hunt? Because I really wanted him to go. And so I bought some little toys that would move around erratically It was watching him come online as a crow that was super fascinating, because all of a sudden one day he was like, oh, wow, I've got wings. And he figured out what to do with them. I didn't have to teach him. He was teaching me. He crash landed a few times, but within 48 hours, he was flying to the roof of my house and then coming back down. It took him a while to leave the yard. And he'd see other crows coming, and he'd fly right to me, and I would protect him from these other crows, who, incidentally, were watching him every morning when I would have my coffee. There would be crows circling my yard as I was out with Carl in the yard. But just watching him, again, just watching him become a crow, and he knew, I put that little toy out for him to hunt, and he was watching it and playing with it, but as soon as he saw a bug, he was like, oh, zoom, and he knew exactly what to do with it. So I think that they're very, they know they're crows. They know what to do.
And the intelligence of the wild and the whole kind of movement to rewilding plants, you know, returning annuals to perennials, and all of that. So I told you and radio audience that, you know, I lived with Stella Coyote, actual coyote. Well, her mother was a dog. That's the crucial part, or I would have given her a one-way plane ticket to Denver. but her dad was a coyote, and the wild so much prevails, like, but she was a between-worlds person, right? So we were assigned this experiment. But when I went to pick her up at the age of 6 weeks, she killed a rabbit in the yard. I'm like, whew, this is going to be an adventure. And it was, indeed, you know. But... you know, and I had the wolf dog, and he was appalled because their customs are so different. He's like, why did you bring this heathen, this dog? Because the different customs. We would all be in bed, and Stella Coyote would go, one more thing to make it perfect, and she'd pee in a circle around us. And the wolf dog would go, that is disgusting. That just what have you done? And he's also like, I'll just stand out here in the rain. I'm like, oh, I'm really sorry. No, anyway, we worked it out because, I mean, you do so much work with animals, and I admire that. I mean, literally, I want to be more like you. But I know that everything needs its story, right? So I would tell the wolf dog and the coyote, here's what we're doing. We're doing an experiment, you know, and here's the thing. And, you know, when then I got to Shiba Inus and I already had the cats and they were treating the cats like prey. I'm like, no, not prey, pack, not prey, pack. And I just told everybody their story at night with their names, you know, going, here we are, Captain Moon and Miss Fox and Amun-Rab Bao and Kismet Kitty and me living in harmony in the witchery, right? And they would look like, oh, and then it happened, right? And now they are the best of buddies. I think everyone wants their story. And it's interesting in the article, right, because it's a very fun article, again, in the April Harper's, and I've posted it everywhere possible in the world, and you can find it. It's really, really good, and it's how I found you, Yvette, going, oh, that's so great. many great things in that particular article and a lot of interesting critique because she goes off and she gets in touch with Dewal, who's a great bonobo expert, and he says, I don't believe in telepathy. And references Rupert Sheldrake, the widely discredited biologist. That would just give Rupert Sheldrake such a conniption fit to read that, going, I'll tell you. But it is a complex realm, you know, of animal communicators, and as the article says, some grifters. And so I've talked to animal communicators, some for real. You're really for real, but you're not telling people like, oh, you were with this animal in a past life and he'll come back to you. We don't know. And some were like, maybe, you know, but that idea of, I do think Dewal was a little bit human in that response, because I do think, and let me pass it to you, that there is animal telepathy. And I agree with the dog whisperer that animals see the pictures in our minds. Do you think that's true?
I think that is true. I, you know, I may not be able to, you know, ask my dog what he had for lunch or if he's been my dog in a previous life, someone's dog that. And mostly because there's no way to validate that anyways. There's no way, you know, right. I'm also... you know, the other half of me is pretty skeptical about all of it, you know, and so I have to witness it before. And so when I witness that I will be thinking about something completely different, and all of a sudden I will see an image cross my mind with my dog holding a bag of Purina dog chow in his mouth, which he's never even had bagged food. That's my stuff, right? And I'm like, oh my God, it's 10 o'clock at night. I forgot to feed him, and I turn around and he's sitting right there, like looking at me. I'm certain I got that picture from him, and I got it in a form that I would understand. I do think that, I do think that, you know, if we're quiet, we can, that first image that we get, or thought, or feeling, is what we need to go with, and that will most often than not.
And there is a community intelligence. I mean, the reason I call website and what I do Coyote Network News, it's when I was first adopting Stella Coyote, as not as a pet, right, just as a companion experimental co-cahooter. But I was mostly the only human she trusted, you know, and she did like inside. Stella did not trust humans really much. She liked humans around the fire making music, and she thought pillows were great. She was like, pillows, good, you can take the rest of humans. But I'd gone away to California, and the house sitter that she came to respect, a cosmic redneck, tough-ass person that Stella liked. But at that time, and Stella wouldn't come into the house, and I was walking in Point Reyes, and I ran into a coyote that came up quite close, and I said, hello, I live with one of your people. Hi, how you doing? And it was exactly at that moment, on another coast, that Stella Coyote trotted into the house like nothing. And I go, oh, that's really great. There is a mysterious telepathy, but I like your high standards. That's right, because we're in a realm where people can make up stuff, and you know, and it's the difference. Also, I love astrology, and people go, "Are you psychic?" And I usually go, "I knew you'd ask that." But there's a difference because you know, just what you said, you know, a psychic. There's no verifiable training necessarily. I mean, there are real psychics, but there's also a whole realm of bogusness. You know, maybe I was a priestess in Atlantis. Who knows? You know, but you know, in astrology, you have to go, where did you get that? I mean, there's some Saturn standards and your own standards too. You being Capricorn, incarnational agent of Saturn, and just for the fun of it, there's images for each degree of the zodiac, and the image for your Saturn is a squirrel hiding from hunters. But it's not a negative symbol; it's just a canny symbol, and I kind of like that. And the only angle your Saturn has is a fantastic quintile. I was pulling up your chart, and I go, I bet she's got a quintile. It's a 72-degree angle of irresistible eloquence, and it's from Saturn to Mercury in Sagittarius at the degree of resolving climate chaos. And we go, ooh, look at you, look at you. And just to toss it back to you, the reason I love the quintiles is it's irresistible eloquence, which I'm going to just say you have that with the creatures. And it's also, a friend says, it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds. And we can take that on any level. But I look at your chart and I think, you know, what a valuable member of community you are, right? I mean, you really know how to do stuff. And
I said thank you. And yeah, we kind of, you know, we are a go-to place in our neighborhood for when people need stuff, especially with animals. I had a neighbor not too long ago drop off a little chihuahua and her one-day-old puppy because they didn't know what to do with it. And so she stayed here for 8 weeks. We found them both. You know, that kind of stuff is always happening at our house. You know, my veterinarian has actually sent me cats that she sent me not too long ago a cat that was found. And she was obviously a very old cat that we suspect she left her home to go pass away. And then someone found her and interrupted that whole process. But she wasn't chipped, so we didn't know where to return her to. So my veterinarian asked if she could come stay here with us, and sure enough, she had 5 wonderful days of just being fed and loved, and she was very stumbly on her feet and could hardly walk. And then one morning I look at her, and she had jumped up onto the sofa, and she jumped up into the windowsill, and she was just, she looked so much better. And I was like, oh, she might pull through. And then the very next thing was like, no, I'm having my last hurrah. I left the house. When I came back a couple of hours later, she was under the sofa. She had passed away. So, you know, we do a lot of that. We do a lot of that kind of stuff here. And I love it, and I can't, you know, it's just what I do.
Yeah, because I would think that, you know, either you know it or you know who knows it, you know, from where to get your car fixed cheap to how to talk to the crows or there was all these things. So our wonderful guest today is Yvette I can do it. Buigas. There we go.
Yeah.
Buigas. We're going to take a very, very short musical break, and we'll be back after this with more tales, more animal humor as well. Here we go.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our splendid guest today is Yvette Buigas. There we go.
Buigas.
I've got it. Where are the Buigases from? Where is that?
It is a Spanish name. We are from Spain. Actually, my parents and my grand... Yeah, I'm first-generation American. My parents were... My grandparents went to Argentina from Spain, and then my parents came up here.
You grew up in L.A.?
I grew up all over the place. I started out in L.A., but I did some of my childhood in Buenos Aires, and I've lived in Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, Canada, Spain, Argentina, everywhere.
But always in your childhood, you loved animals, yeah?
Oh, always. And I always had them. And you know, even in Argentina, when I was a kid, I would constantly bring home little kittens that I'd find at the botanical gardens to try to make healthy. And my family had no idea what to do with me because they were not cat people for certain. But yeah, I was constant my whole life. Yeah.
No, I know. I feel kinned. I used to go to Adele's pet shop, and Adele was a kind of mean old bat, like a truck stop waitress, you know, and I'd go with a dollar, and I'd go, what can I buy for a dollar? You'd go, she'd say, oh, Christ, it's that kid with a dollar again. No, go away. Yeah. But the animals. And I do apologize, you know, like you with the crow didn't know, you know, there are many mistakes. We want to make amends for all of our ignorant rudeness or violation of customs in some way. But I also had finding little fledgling birds, and there was these moments, stay with us forever, where I found a little fledgling bird and, you know, kept it warm, and then it seemed pretty good, and I put it out before dawn on the lawn, and all the birds were around, and they came and took it away.
Yeah.
And I think in a good way. I think the team and... you were talking about the cat, you know, had gone off to die, and someone had taken it out and interfering with its process. And what about animals' autonomy and death? You know, it's poignant when our animals go hiding, you know, and we do want to haul them out of the closet or from underneath the deck. And do you just let them be?
I would probably, if my cat crawled under the deck to let herself go, I would probably join her and wait with her. For some odd reason, I do see a lot of animals that are at the end of their life. And I have had just a couple of years ago, a feral cat that was already an adult. And he came up to me and I was walking my two dogs and he just would not go away. And my dogs wanted to eat him. And he was kept coming. So I handed the dogs to my husband, and I said, well, if this cat lets me pick him up, I'd seen him around. I will have to take him home with us because he's obviously not in a good way. And I brought him home, and I knew that he, you know, I felt that he was going to pass away. He looked very unhealthy, very malnourished. I took him into my veterinarian. She kind of agreed. And then she looked at me and she said, if anybody can help this cat pull through, it would be you. And I was like, oh, really? And I obviously I cried. I cry. And so I brought Orange Norbert home. And 3 years later, after we thought night after night it was going to be his last one, he lives in the Santa Cruz Hills right now, and his name is Rio, and he's happy as a clam, and he is the king of his little castle. So I brought him back, yeah. But there's, or I helped him, or he helped me, or something. But, you know, I have, right. I've sat with quite a few animals that are passing, and I kind of get that they have a different take on it. They're not as attached to this life as we are.
I want to think that.
I every time I have dealt with an animal dying, I get very clearly that they know, you know, when we're helping an animal with euthanasia, for example, I know they know that we're doing this for them, not to them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just my own stuff, but it comes in so strong to me. You know, my dog, Jeffrey, from For the Love of Jeffrey, the day that we had to let him go, I had a veterinarian. My veterinarian was out of town, so he died the day before my birthday. My birthday's on a holiday, so she was out of town for the holidays. And I had friends come over to say their last goodbyes. We did a whole thing. He never got up once because he was very sick. When that veterinarian came up, the minute she showed up, he got up, he ran down a flight of stairs, and he jumped up on her as if to say, I am so glad you're here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. And I, you know, yeah, and I get it. And then all of our animals were present with us, because I also think it's important that they see what's happening. And he was surrounded by cats when we let him go, and our cats were very attentive. And the minute he left his body, one of them got up and walked away. The other one commenced grooming. He was gone.
Yep.
And that wasn't Jeffrey any longer. And so they know, I think they do know. And I get that, you know, that's why my cats, nobody was looking for Jeffrey the next day. The only ones crying in the house were me and my husband.
Right.
But it seems that everybody else kind of got it.
No, I love that. I was talking to my friend Sylvia and saying, you know, one of my cats had died, and exactly what you said. And she said, well, that's because they know it's an illusion. I go, oh, I want to feel that. I want to believe that. Elephants are, I'm sorry, but some like crows have funerals, and elephants are really into the body. So it's a different customs,
yes.
Right?
Yes. And it brings me to when my dad was sick, and I was his main caretaker, and he had cancer, and our dog at the time also had cancer. And my dad would look at me and he'd go, I am so envious of your dog, because when he's ready to go, you will be able to help him cross without anybody accusing you of anything. He's like, oh, I have to sit and wait, and you're letting Pierre leave when it's just too much for him.
Right.
And I loved hearing that from my dad, because he was a gruff old good Latino man who wasn't, you know, did not believe in anything. And to hear that, and to also hear him say to me that he knew that he now understood me. The last day of his life, he had a moment of lucidity when he said, you know, I now understand you, that you are here to help me cross over, because you know more about crossing over than I do. And I thought that was very curious coming from my dad, but I think he might be right. I do have a relationship with helping things leave this realm.
That's so great. Yeah, and it's you know, now we're back to the mystery of telepathy or whatever. My dad was a gruff old person as well, and was hanging on and frightened to die. And I just sat with him the last night, and I didn't say anything, but I thought a lot of things out loud, you know. And I knew he couldn't leave until he was assured that we're all going to be okay. You did a good job, and we're all going to be okay.
Yeah.
And I just said those things. And when I got up to leave, he said, "Thank you for everything you just said." I hadn't said anything out loud, right? And then off he went. And these are mysteries. These are mysteries. And also what you're saying, you know, dying cats in the closet, right? So I would, exactly what you said, crawl in there with them. And what I found also is some cats were in terrible pain, kidney stuff, you know. And I would tell them our story, right? Remember, here's where I found you, and then we did this, and then we moved to California, and we did this thing. And the cat would... Several cats in this would purr, num 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 num, and then die as they were purring. We just want to experiment. We don't know, you know. And then autonomy and death, which you're teaching us, which is so good. And I told you that when Stella Coyote was getting close, and I was so worried about my own grief, because she, the longest relationship I've ever had, you know, with anybody.
Exactly.
With 19 years of living, and she knew everything. And whenever I would, you know, worry and go, "And what will I do with your beautiful little body? What will I do?" She would bite me, almost break skin, but look me in the eye. And it was our kind of humor. We want to get to animal humor, and it would crack us up. I mean, I'd go, "Oh, okay, all right, thank you, Stella Coyote." It was very clear. We'll know when we get there. This is useless. Your
Absolutely.
Anticipatory grief is useless, right? And then she taught me a great thing, because she loved the wolf dog more than life itself, more than me or anybody. And when he was dying, she was moved, but she was wild. And she goes, "I love you more than life itself, but you're dying, and I'm going to take your food." Right? And then when he died, she grieved. It was very clear. But I've kept this always, because she taught me the difference between sentimentality and grief. And she it increased her appetite for life. She was clearly grieving, and she's like, I'm going to live. That's my form of grieving. And that has stood me in good stead. And I have, and that subtle difference, sentimentality, where we go, "Oh, no, animals are many things, but they're not sentimental." I mean, that's really a human thing. And sentimentality almost kind of is an obstacle to grief. And then the deep grief. But anyway, I just took that with me all the time. And it's maybe part of animal humor. I wanted to and fro about animal. It's April Fool's Day, and animals have great humor. I mean, I have some great examples, but if anything comes to your mind, the wolf dog, we'd take, you know, there was so much more wildlife when I first moved here, you know, and I think everybody can say that about everywhere. There's less and less, but there was beavers. There was a white fox. There was a white deer. There was a blue heron that used to come with us on our walks in the woods. And I mean, many wonderful things. But there was a beaver that whenever it saw my dog, it would, you know, whack its tail, which I think is a warning, but also clearly provocative, because it was whenever it saw the dog. And I was worried, of course, of the dog going in after the beaver with its sharp teeth and its skill in the water. And so I was. So there was the beaver, whack, and the dog runs after it, and it's dark, and I hear this giant splash, and I'm like, "Oh, God," and I'm peering in going, you know, Moondog, where are you? And I swear he tiptoed up behind me, and it really was like him saying, "You looking for something?" And I'm like, "Oh, Moondog. It was dog humor. It was definitely dog humor. And I go, "Oh, that's very..." And then Stella Coyote did many witty things. Well, she'd steal wallets and stuff, and it would give her enormous pleasure in degree to the person's distress. She would creep up and just snap, you know, people's shoe straps in half, and then they'd go, "Oh," and she'd go, and it would amuse her. It would just, you know, to create a ruckus. But do you have thoughts about animal humor?
I think they're hilarious.
Yes.
You know, we have, you know, I have a cat that I just think is the funniest cat in the world. Some of the stuff that he will do. And I've also, you know, Jeffrey again comes to mind. He had a sensational sense of humor, and you could not laugh at him or with him because it would just set him off and his antics would just go more and more. And I wish I could remember of a story exactly. You know, there was the time that I walked in on him and he had was on all four paws up on my counter. And this is an animal that had no guilt also. And he was up on the counter. Yeah, and he had gone through 3 pounds of carnitas that I had out. And I had them on the counter. They weren't on the counter. They were up on a shelf. So he got himself on the counter and then up onto the top shelf because I had just purchased them and I was about to feed my painters some lunch. And so he ate all 3 pounds. And when I came in and yelled at him to get the bleep off of the counter, he just stood there and he sat down and he just wagged his tail on the counter like, well, you should have been here 5 minutes ago because they were delicious. And, you know, then it was jump off the counter, play position, run around. You know, also Ernie, the dog that's in the article, he's just a good laugh almost every time I work with him. He's got me laughing. He's, you know, I don't want to call him a clown because he's not a clown, but he's definitely someone who will play little tricks on you here and there. And yeah, you know, it's, they can be very funny. I'm sure something else will come to me because they've got me laughing every day.
No, it's great that way to lighten our heart, and it is clearly humor and tricks. And I did learn so much from Stella Coyote. I mean, I lived with Trickster itself, and it's absolutely true. All the stories about Trickster being an idiot and everything, I think those are even the Native American ones, I think they're way late and kind of colonial. Because no, this is ingenious. And it was all bargaining and very often telepathic bargaining. And I was honored to receive, backstage. I told you that I would go down and explore her, what are you up to now, Stella, projects under the deck, you know. And she had made a den, a little hole, and she'd lined the archway with stones, really lovely stones, and she'd put them in place with her little pointy nose. And I'm like, she'd invented the cathedral flying buttress, for goodness sake. And then, every night when she first came, at around 1 a.m., she would gather things from around the house and put them in a circle, and then she would attack them and animate them in turn. And the wolf dog and I would stare in horror, and he was like, what have you brought in here? So I put my little, and then she'd run around and bite us, right? So she would animate, she'd make things in a circle, she'd animate them, and then she'd run around and bite me and the dog. And so I put my little forehead next to her, and I go, okay, here's the deal. I can see you're a great artist. And I am guaranteeing you great food and love and security as much as I can. And I can see you're an artist. So I will provide you with art supplies so you don't need to do this bitey thing anymore. And she never did. But I had to keep my end of the bargain. And I think they'd see colors because she liked bright colors. I would give her little squares of cloth and stuff and balls of yarn. And one day I came upstairs and she'd done just like in a children's thing. She had taken balls of yarn and wrapped the yarn all around the furniture legs and made this intricate design. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, so there's so much intelligence. I mean, destruction, she'd, you know, make holes in walls. But also creativity. And then wheeling and dealing, you know, if I give you this, will you bring that back? No. How about if I give you two of those? Okay, two. I mean, it was absolutely, and the reason I so love what your dedication and the article in Harper's, The Crow Whisperer, largely about yourself, and because I think this is so important for us humans now, like the tragedy of the farmers in Iowa mistakenly killing the crows, but killing their allies, you know, that we do want to approach going, you know, what's the story? And my friend in Costa Rica who did not pull out a jar of a bottle of Raid and kill the ants, he was taught that they were his helpers, right? You know, and I think this is so important for now, and it is, You'd mentioned that part of your dream is to have an animal sanctuary, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to have a place where we did older animals who didn't have anywhere else to go, that were on their last, you know, few months or a year, and some palliative care and some rehab stuff, because the body worker in me, I've seen fantastic things with putting my hands on animals. And so I would love to just have land and have room for animals to come and just have, you know, retired horses. Right now I'm working with a horse and I'm learning that the horses retire, and then where do they go?
Right.
Yeah.
And greyhounds. So I would, yeah.
And greyhounds. And, you know, and then also with the work I do, I do some volunteer work for the Bull Terrier Rescue. And I've seen them before where they have a dog that somebody decided they can't take care of anymore. And it's an older dog who's got cancer, and I would just love to bring them all home and give them a safe place to indulge, and, you know, to indulge with all the goodies they can, and then to pass when they need to, whether that be with human help or no.
I think that's such an antidote. I mean, the thing where I often will get sucked in, but happily so, you know, on Facebook or whatever, is the dodo films about animals being rescued, or unhappy animals brought home who get a new lease on life, or some dog stuck under a bridge. And it's like, this is good humans. This is good humans. And then just in the spirit of pragmatic, reciprocal blessing whimsy, I do notice that your entire chart is coming alive with synchronicity by about April 10th, 11th, 12th. And so I just thought, well, let's just put it out there that, you know, if you want to do something good in the world, you know, Yvette could use a sanctuary. Lease it, loan it,
give
it. I just want to put that out there, because I think that would be a splendid investment in life, and it's kind of likely. So you're willing to hum, right? To receive allies and support.
Always.
Yes.
Always. Yeah.
Excellent. That's so great. And then you know, there's also so I aspire to practice this, you know, and, you know, the article is so beautiful that, you know, the crows are all upset with your neighbor because they didn't know why at first, but their dog had maimed a fledgling. And then when you arrive all dressed in black, you know, you said that, or she quotes you as saying that you just thought quiet thoughts, I'm here to help, right? Or did you say them out loud?
Yeah. Well, I was I was talking softly to the little crow. But on the inside, I was repeating over and over, I'm here to help. I'm not here to hurt. I'm here to help. And I think they knew that. I think, you know, I can't remember the book, but there's a book about, I can't remember the name of it. But he talks about how plants can feel your intentions.
Yes.
And,
it's called The Secret Life of Plants. Right.
Okay. Thank you. And animals are the same way. They can, I believe wholeheartedly, that when I walk into a room, you know, when I walk in, horses, for example, and I'm not in a good space, those horses know I'm not in a good space, and they're not going to let me work on them. And so if my intention is, if I can quiet myself and my intention is, I am not here to poke you or jab you, I'm here to help, they know that too. And and they'll show me, and I'll feel it in my body where I need to work. So I absolutely think that they know where we're coming from.
Right. No, the article says, you know, that you began by offering soothing words and sending the birds unspoken messages that you came in peace and were there to help.
Yeah.
I guess once my cat brought a venomous copperhead snake into the house, I'm like, oh my god, what do I do? I felt like such a girl, like that. And it's like, first move the cat, and there we go. And then I just go, I am not here to harm you. You know, nobody needs to get hurt here, right? And it had been, you know, calmed down or injured by the cat, so it wasn't quite as thrashing, but it was still quite a surprise to go, what are you playing with, kitty? Like, oh my God.
Yes.
There was a very high up window, and I had a dustbin, and I go, nobody needs to get hurt. I am your friend. I am your friend. There you go. And he was gone the next day, or she, so must have done okay. Snakes and spiders are more challenging, but with the spiders, because I used to have like spiders the size of my hand in the house when it was wilder outside, and some of them were jumping spiders. I'm like, oh my God. But same thing, I would go, I am here to rescue you. I want to give you safe conveyance outside. I'm going to put a jar over you and a piece of cardboard underneath it. And there you go. So I always rescue spiders.
I do the same. I have an agreement with my spiders in my house. So far I have not been bitten. But the agreement is you can have all the bugs you want in my house. I do not eat bugs. But you cannot bite me. Because I don't do well with spider bites. I have not been bitten. And also that whole thing about putting them outside, I learned something not too long ago that I think is fabulous, is that a house spider is just that, a house spider. Mm. And if we take them from a house that we're used to having at 70 degrees all year long and we put them outside, we're possibly sending them on their... Yeah, we're giving them a death sentence because they don't know how to live in that environment.
Right. No. These are all important fine points. The giant spiders the size of my hand that were jumping, I'm like, I don't know if you're a house spider. I think you're not. But even if you are, you're going out. You know, it's too spooky. It's too spooky.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. And it would seem to approach the bed like, you know, I want you to notice me and possibly take me somewhere else, and that's good. So much wonderfulness. Let's keep the conversation going. And if there's anything, we're on our final half minute here, but if there's any wish you want to put out into the world, or any woof woof, or any crow sound, or all howl together, here you go.
You know, I just want to say thank you. I'm so grateful. You know, that was one of the things that Carl taught me, is he reminded me, you know, I've always been grateful, but he really reminded me how we have to be grateful for the animals around us and the things that we don't understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely, we are grateful. Well, thank you so much, Yvette Buigas. Let us continue conversing. This is so wonderful. And again, her Instagram account is, I've got it somewhere. You have it in your mind, right? Your Instagram account is quickly... Heavy Black Line and For the Love of Jeffrey. There we go. I'm Caroline Casey. Thanks so much to Kirsten Thomas, and we will reconvene next week. CoyoteNetworkNews.com.